from the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the closing market report for the 27th day of January 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Matt Bennett will be here too from Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds in Windsor, Illinois. We'll discuss the weather forecast today with Eric Snodgrass of Agrible and take a look at today's decision by the Iowa Supreme Court as it relates to Field Tiles Point Source Solution and who's responsible in the Des Moines Water Works lawsuit for the cleanup of nitrates in that city's drinking water. And we'll do all of that right here on this Friday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report. Oh, we'll check on Argentina's yield forecast too. Todd Hubbs from the U of I has done some interesting work.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting in Waco, Texas. Good to have you on a Friday afternoon. Hey, thanks for being with us today, Dan.
More than welcome, Todd.
Okay, so this is a chance we get to take a look at the weeklies rather than the dailies and the expectations for the end of the week. What did you see in your cycles?
Well, cycles were ripe to kind of see show a period of some softness in here. Now, the key here is that we try to maybe begin to find some stability and try to regroup here by the first part of next week. Now, I think, of course, there's all kinds of reasons why the market declined this week. I think, you know, to start off with was probably the market was a little overbought from the January price strength. We've had some whipsaw action in the currencies from sharply lower to sharply higher. I think that may have a lot to do with Trump's trade policies. Nobody's really for sure how the trade policies and trade agreements are going to play out over time. So that's, I think, has had a little jerk in the currency. And for the most part, the South American weather pattern has turned a little more favorable this past week. So we did have some softness. Now, for the week, corn soybeans are going to close lower, but for the month, they are still ahead for the month. And I guess we have a couple days or so next week before the month ends, but we'll have to see what. I think the overall trends in corn and soybeans remain higher. That goes along with wheat, it's sideways to higher. But I think a lot of the weakness can also be attributed this week toward end of the month, long liquidation. We had a lot of fund selling in here today. So that's commission churning for Chicago. You got to keep in mind that Chicago gets paid by commissions. So it's a commission-driven type market. And also, you probably have seen a pickup of some farmer selling. You normally see a pickup of farmer selling as you go toward the end of the month, rather to avoid maybe another round of storage charges. So that, I think, kind of goes in. But all in all, I think the overall trends remain sideways to higher. But I also think that, you know, from a fundamental perspective, if the spring weather pattern begins to break early or people begin to think it's going to break early, I think it's going to be awful heavy to kind of hold this market up if the South American crop begins to, you know, take over as where all the world export buyers seem to kind of congregate down in South America this time of year. I know our weekly export sales have been real strong up to this point, but somewhere in here, they'll probably slow down some, and you'll see that pick up probably in South America or so.
So I'm looking at the monthly chart, and the trade this month hasn't been very wide. In fact, we're at 363 for the day. Kind of the open and for the month was the bottom end of the marketplace, but that was only at $3.52. So next week will be pretty pivotal, those last couple of days of the month for the trade, and it's not very far down. Do you really think, will we hold on to this as we go into the month of February?
That's my guess, is that we will close higher for the month of January, and we're going to start out higher in the first few days of February. Now, we really don't need to buy any acres. We got, because we have adequate supplies of inventory. But if we would get into summer weather problems, and that's of course a big if, I think the corn would I think the corn traders would like to see a little more acres being planted than what current estimates are, whether it's, you know, 4 million decline or a 6 million decline in corn and a 4 million increase in soybeans or a 6 million acre increase in soybeans. Any type you see a significant decline like that in corn acres, if you would get into some weather adversities down the road, you could tuck in supply fairly quickly. It's not to say that we're going to go back to $5 corn anytime soon, but there's reason to believe that you could go back to last year's high points if we got in some weather problems. So I guess I'm kind of in the opinion that corn may try to stay firmer or try to rally here during the first couple weeks of February anyway. Soybeans may have a tendency to struggle more. Because of their price, they have already bought significant acres, at least if these farmer surveys are correct. And South American harvest is beginning to pick up and going to have some downward pressure in soybeans. So I guess I would expect probably the month of February to be corn should gain on soybeans, or soybeans are going to lose to corn.
Dan Zwicker is with Zwicker Consulting. He's in Waco, Texas, joins us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. In today's agricultural news, the Iowa Supreme Court has ruled drainage districts in the state cannot be sued for the cleanup of nitrates in drinking water. Justice Thomas Waterman authored the majority opinion, writing that policy deciding who pays for nitrate removal is the jurisdiction of Iowa lawmakers. This was a win for the drainage districts, says University of Illinois agricultural policy specialist Jonathan Kappas, but that the Clean Water Act implications of the suit about whether or not field tiles or point sources that can be regulated remains to be addressed.
The big question under the Clean Water Act, as I understand it, is that Des Moines Water Works is claiming that the agricultural stormwater exemption under the Clean Water Act does not apply to drainage districts in this case, because once it comes through the pipes, it becomes a point source. That was not determined by the Iowa Supreme Court today.
Again, the decision in the Iowa courts is that only lawmakers in the state can determine who pays for the cleanup of nitrates from drainage districts. It did not address issues related to whether or not field tiles should be subject to regulation under the Clean Water Act. Let's stay with the river system, but we'll switch over to infrastructure. A purported Trump administration document on possible infrastructure projects is raising hopes that long-awaited locks modernization on the upper Mississippi and Illinois rivers may finally get the political boost they need. The Washington Post reports the National Governors Association received the list, though the Trump administration says that's not official. Still, the list is very specific, naming airports, bridges, highways, rail projects, and even waterway projects important to Midwest farmers. And Waterways Council Senior Vice President Deborah Calhoun won't comment on the list's authenticity, but had this to say when asked if it includes locks on the upper Mississippi and Illinois rivers, a part of the Navigation and Ecosystem Sustainability Program, or something called NESP.
I believe that they were. I believe that some of the NESP projects themselves were there. Again, you know, hard to say if that's the real deal, but I think we're in a really good position because we feel that we are engaged in a public-private partnership between commercial operators and the federal government to cost-share those projects, those priority projects.
More than half a dozen LOX projects on the Upper Mississippi and Illinois Rivers have been waiting for years for funding since being authorized in 2007. Central Illinois Republican Rodney Davis complained back in September about the delay.
In a word of 2007, Congress authorized construction of seven new 1,200-foot locks along the Upper Mississippi and Illinois waterway system. Yet here we are 9 years later, and the Corps still hasn't completed pre-construction engineering and design for these projects.
President Trump has pledged to mobilize between $500 billion to $1 trillion to upgrade the nation's aging roads, bridges, and transportation hubs, all important for agriculture. The fight, of course, will be over how to raise the money. And finally today, environmental groups have filed a lawsuit over the Environmental Protection Agency's decision last year to allow the sale of Monsanto's Xtendimax, a combination of dicamba and glyphosate. Groups filing the suit include the National Family Farm Coalition, Center for Food Safety, Center for Biological Diversity, and Pesticide Action Network of North America. The suit was filed on January 20th in the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. There's a brand new article up on the FarmDog Daily website I think you should go read. It's about Argentine yields for soybeans. It was penned by Daryl Good, Scott Irwin, and lead author Todd Hubbs, agricultural economist here on this campus. He now joins us to discuss the article. Hey, thanks, Todd. What was the purpose of looking into soybean yields in Argentina?
We went and got soybean yield data for Argentina. And we're using USDA Foreign Ag Service data. We feel that's probably the best estimate rather than the Ministry of Agriculture in Argentina and various other sources. And what we've done is calculated a trend yield from 1978 through 2016. And you know, statistically, the best fit for lack of a better word, was a linear trend. It's not a very good fit on the data. There's a lot of variability around the trend, but it's the best fit we could find under different functional forms. And then what we did is it allows us to project what we think the trend yield will be this year and talk about the deviations around the trend. So how often Argentinian soybean yields are above or below trend. And what we found is soybean yields in Argentina over the 39-year period, 22 years they're above trend, and 17 they were below trend. But when they're below trend, they're often well below trend, so large deviations on the negative side.
So the point, I suppose, is there's a lot of variability in the, over time, at least in the data that's available for the Argentine numbers. They also, when they have a bad year, they really have a bad year for soybeans, apparently. And there are more than a few bad years. So 2012, 1989, 1997. The last one that we have reported is 2009. Did we not have numbers for 2016?
We did. It's just not in the four worst.
Really?
That's correct.
So what happened last year that was really moving the marketplace in their grand scheme of things was further down the line than the top four.
It was.
That says something all on its own. So once we get to that point, what are the implications, especially as you look into the USDA's expectations for this year and the numbers they're already using?
The USDA is projecting 43.57 bushels an acre in Argentina, and that's about 1.4 bushels higher than our trend yield estimation for a grand production number of about 2.1 billion bushels. That's USDA's world agriculture production projection right now. Having said that, there's been a lot of reports out of Argentina recently of flooding. And just recently, the Buenos Aires Grain Exchange came out saying they thought the production number would be about 53.5 million tons, which is the equivalent of about 128 billion bushels, lower than what the USDA is projecting, which sort of fits into this idea of if there's a 2-bushel deviation, you're going to lose about 96 million bushels. And so they're basically saying, they're saying a 3.5 million metric ton drop in production this year, which is outside that 2-bushel range. It's really hard to say right now. I don't think anybody has a good handle on exactly what's going to come out, especially I've heard a lot of chatter out of Argentina. There's been a lot of speculation about this crop losing significant amounts of production. I've heard anywhere from 50 million metric tons to 53.5, but USDA hasn't budged on their 57 million metric tons yet. So we'll see in the February report maybe if there's some kind of adjustment.
Todd Hubbs is an agricultural economist at the University of Illinois. He, Scott Irwin, and Daryl Good have penned an article that's posted to the Farm Doc Daily website on Argentine yields and expectations for the coming year. Find it at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Let's check now the cash grain market. Matt Bennett from Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds is here for the afternoon. Thanks, Matt, for being with us. Tell me about your view of the marketplace.
Well, I think whenever you look at the way these markets are set up, obviously we kind of coasted into the end of the weekend, you know, lost a little bit of ground on both corn and beans. I think there's a lot of uncertainty in the marketplace with, some of the stuff that's going on politically. The weather really isn't offering us a whole lot to trade, but I think traders really didn't want to go into the weekend super short just in case we came in there on Sunday night. And I found that we had a hot and dry forecast because there were some hints as to that in Argentina and southern Brazil. So I think that that's part of the reason why we didn't really go into the weekend with as short of a situation. You know, the market rallied back up closer to unchanged there on the close.
It looks like on the lead option, we'll finish the March with a outside month up. Is that good news?
You know, you would think so. You know, in my opinion, with both corn and beans, you know, a person sitting here looking at these markets, a lot of people asked this week, I was up at Top Producer Seminar, asked, you know, when are we going to see these prices rallying? You know, it seems like things look fairly decent at the time. I could see a little bit more of a rally effort just because there's a lot of things rallying, whether you're talking Dow, bottom line, consumer confidence is quite high. But we have to keep in mind we're in a significantly better situation than what we were a year ago today. And so in my opinion, we need to look at these prices pretty closely and not be worrying about any further rally, you know, and at least manage some of the risk of the downside.
Yeah, so you're talking about new crop soybean sales in that case?
Well, I am. But, you know, another thing a person needs to look at, you know, we're coming into February, obviously, going to be setting the crop insurance. You know, a 390 handle on Dease corn is actually a significantly more profitable situation than a year ago. And it's not because it's 4 cents higher than the spring price. It's because we're looking at much lower input costs. And so I've seen some producers want to hedge some Dease corn in the 390s simply to hedge that ratio. If nothing else, to carry it through the crop insurance setting period. So, you know, I think that soybeans is definitely glaringly the obvious one that we want to hedge. But I've seen some producers that are pretty darn good marketers actually lock that ratio in on their corn, Dease corn in their inputs too.
That's Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Now let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. Eric Snodgrass is here from Agribal, right here in Champaign, Urbana. Hey, thanks, Eric, for being here. Let's start with the United States. What do you see?
Yeah, you know, January's been a pretty warm month. The western half of the country's been pretty cold, but we've kind of had a persistent, you know, kind of weak flow pattern from the subtropical jet stream across our part of the country. And that's allowed us to have temperatures that have hovered, you know, above average for most of the month. And so the thing that's kind of changed, though, in the last 24 hours or so, and it's going to hang around for at least the next couple of weeks, is that in general, we've switched to a different flow pattern. And what it's going to look like over the next couple of days is some more northwesterly flow. And what's going on here is we're having a switch off, a change from where that big ridge had set up over Hudson Bay, kind of moving into a more trough-like pattern across the eastern half of the country. The translation of that is, over the next few days, that northwest flow is going to keep bringing these chances of some snow showers, some lighter stuff, not too much in the terms of heavy accumulation, but that big flip in the weather patterns overall means the whole country, honestly, is going to get into a little bit drier time period. And that shift looks like it might hang around, like I said, for a couple of weeks. In fact, I'm looking at here right now a forecast for the next 5 days in terms of precipitation across most of the Corn Belt. Not much precipitation to talk about. I'm looking at a forecast in the next week in terms of temperatures. I'm seeing the northern half of the country starting to cool off. We might keep a slight warm bias across the southern half of the country, but we're going to get into what maybe feels more like winter after really enjoying a prolonged January thaw. So we're expecting soil temperatures to fall back off again. And we're looking at, I'll just kind of give you a little prelude here of what we're thinking. I'm watching right now a system coming through this area around Super Bowl Sunday that might finally push, central Illinois especially, up in terms of snowfall. There's a ton of uncertainty, but that's one of the things that's going to start to see with this kind of switched flow pattern. And again, that flow pattern's a change where we're now going to be bringing back into cooler weather in the eastern half of the country while the west builds a little bit of warmth. So some change coming up in the short term.
So winter becomes a bit more apparent across to our part of the world. Though when you look forward, we always begin to think about spring as one of those hazardous weather times. Are you concerned at all going forward? And then maybe do a spring outlook for me too.
Yeah, so one of the things we've seen right now is that so far across the United States, especially along the southern coast here in the Gulf Coast, we've had a lot of severe weather activity. Now, in general, when you have a strong La Nina or a strong El Nino, you can get one signal or the other in terms of severe weather activity. But right now we're transitioning out of a weak La Nina. We've had a strong subtropical jet in the southern half of the country. And one of the consequences of that is that we've had over 100 reports of tornadoes, whereas normally for this time point in January, we'd have only had about 30 to 35. So it's been active. One of the things that we're seeing is that as we get towards spring, there's a chance that the eastern half of the country builds in a slight ridge, while the western half of the country maintains a bit of a trough. Now, why I bring that up is because we would be here in the Corn Belt in between those two features. And when we're in between those two features, that signals a pretty active storm track across the middle section of the country. That means we're going to draw quite a bit of moisture from the south, bringing the severe weather ingredients that we might need to have an early start to our severe weather season. So unlike last year we were down 30% on average when you talk about tornado reports, and we were still below average in terms of hail reports. We at Agrible, we're seeing actually this upcoming growing season having a higher potential than we've certainly seen the last couple of years for severe weather. So I'm concerned about that. But you ask about spring, because of that ridge setting in over the kind of the eastern half of the country as being a probable feature to be looking out for, we may signal a little bit of a warm bias for our spring. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody's going to be warmer than average, but that means that overall, that let's call it April and May time period, we may see a little bit warmer than average conditions, which could mean, if, as long as the precipitation doesn't come in real regular and real heavy, could mean another decent start to the 2017 growing season after having a pretty decent start last year to the 2016 growing season. So I know it's a lot to digest and think about, but be on the lookout for these two things: a more active severe weather season in March, April, and May, and the potential right now for a warmer start to the upcoming spring season. So those are the things I'm watching. Those are things I think we need to be concerned about, and I'm glad you asked about them.
Hey, thanks so much, Eric, and we'll talk with you again next week.
Great. Thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Agrible, joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. And just one other tidbit, Eric will be at our All Day Ag Outlook. We'll start talking about that more next week. It'll be Tuesday, the 7th day of March, at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana.